The reading was written by Professor Brian Cantwell-Smith and is called The Language of Matter. Religion may have to change into something never before imagined. We need a new theology as much as we need a new science. We need a theology brought up to date scientifically and altered to capture imaginations and inspire a worldwide community of diverse people. A theology that can incorporate a full range of human questioning into ultimate significance, give people a reason to live and anchor their commitments, help people understand why they should care about things that are important. I believe the updated science and the updated theology will ultimately turn into the same project.
It was an extraordinary event at the Adelaide Zoo earlier this year. The jailbreak. You may have heard about it on the news. In fact, you'd be surprised to know maybe that this extraordinary event, this jailbreak, made headlines all over the world. If you don't believe me, don't take my word for it. Google it. Something about an orangutan imaginatively escaping her captivity clearly captured the imagination of a lot of people right across the planet. Why should this be? This incredible worldwide uptake of this local story here in little old Adelaide, where nothing apart from mass murders ever happens. Could it be that it was a slow news day all over the world? Or is it so unusual everywhere that it's newsworthy everywhere? Or is it more evidence of the fact that news really has devolved into mere amusement and monkeys are, well, funny? Or is it, you know, that old familiar media fear-mongering? Wild animals busting loose. What next? Lions roaming the streets? Is anyone safe? We interrupt this program to bring you the following news bulletin. A gang of enraged gibbons have managed to tunnel out of the zoo today and were seen heading in the direction of the fruit market. Citizens are advised to remain indoors and hide fruit from plain sight. But I trivialize. Her escape itself is a little less compelling to me than our fascination with it, this worldwide fascination with it. Why was this so, this brief but intense worldwide fascination? Well, for one thing, it's just a great story. How and why she escaped, and what she did when she got out. Her name, by the way, she has a name, is Carta. And this name elides, unfortunately, into an old but strangely apt joke. I took my wife to Indonesia. Jakarta? No, she went of her own accord. Boom, boom. We'll come back to that joke a little later. Carta is her name. Carta is 27, from Indonesia, about 5'2", weighing about 62 kilos, reddish hair, and eyes that seem to look straight into your soul. And I think I love her, despite the fact that she has the intelligence of a 5-year-old human, or maybe because of that. Ah, but don't worry, Carta loves another. Her partner of many years, Pusung, had died recently, and she'd been evidently grieving. And as pain or want or necessity are the mothers and stepmothers of invention, Carta managed to channel and sublimate all her grief to do something extraordinary. Before the aghast onlookers and zoologists, she achieved a kind of mini-evolution, one of those evolutionary steps that are said to produce sudden mutations. Not really a small step, more a giant leap. This leap of Carta's encapsulating the major psychological stages of human development. I'll illustrate. Evolution, step one. Carta, the tool maker. Now, early in her life, Carta had worked out that if you touch the electric fence, it hurt. By the way, this is where my ape ancestor's evolution would have stopped. It would have been, zzz, ow, zzz, ow, zzz, ow. Why is he'd still be there. But if you touch it holding a stick, it doesn't hurt. Stick's not like hand. If stick is on the fence, hand not hurt. And thus, Carta, this orangutan, worked out how to use a tool, a stick, to short-circuit the electric fence. Tool making was once thought to be exclusive to humans, but has been known for some time to be firmly within the tactical repertory, the grasp of all great apes. Fence no longer a barrier, fence now a climbing frame. Evolution step 2, Carta the Renaissance Ape. Fence climbing is one thing, but getting over the fence and realizing that the fence is itself within a sunken enclosure must have been a blow to her. But no, she had planned for this. Near the enclosure wall, which is impossible in itself to scale, was a pile of branches, big pile, garnered over the preceding days without anybody taking any notice. Some of these branches had to be bartered for from the other orangutans, who also rather like their branches. Nobody noticed this development of a careful plan, a plan which revealed a capacity for imagining the future and for abstract thinking. You know, what would it be like if I got over the wall? And so she compiles enough branches to climb up and atop the enclosure wall, which she does. Carta surveys the zoo grounds, the neighboring parklands, and off into the distance, the city, which must have seemed so strange and wonderful to her in the fading afternoon light. Jakarta? No, she went of her own accord. Evolution step 3, thoroughly modern Carta. She's now free, entirely without enclosure. Free also from the higher beings, the gods that used to produce food in such a way that she was supposed to think it was hidden. She'd work that out too, humor them. I'm smarter than they think. So she's now free from these higher beings, free from the familiar landscape of her entire world. Now what? She spent a half an hour on top of the wall, apparently weighing her options. So she makes it over the wall, she does a plan, she gets to the top of the wall, she's up there half an hour just apparently thinking about it. And some of the questions that might have come to mind would be these. Would Pusung be out there somewhere in the great unknown? How will I find him? How will I get food if the humans and I don't play the hide-and-seek game? Will there be others out there who will take care of my needs? What will it be like out there? Will it hurt? And so with a thoroughly modern freedom, Carta now has a thoroughly existential problem. Being free, what am I to do? Evolution step 4, a postmodern Carta. Little background. The cold truth of orangutans is this. They are a critically endangered species and plummeting towards extinction. There are about 1,000 left in rehabilitation centers in Sumatra and Borneo. Their habitats are vanishing as their more numerous planet mates, us, consume ever more of the resources that comprise their habitat. If no forest survives, where will the rehabilitated orangutans be released into? Suburban neighborhoods? Well, there are zoos, of course, and let us be honest, a zoo is a kind of a prison. No matter how well-fed you are, no matter what array of culturally suitable diversions have been stage-managed for you, you're still in an enclosure. You're still regulated by the more powerful, higher beings. The French philosopher Michel Foucault was deeply interested in the way we internalize social power. Make it part of us. He writes that physical domination of the body is now no longer required in our world, but can be achieved through isolation and the constant possibility of observation. The zoo cage is like a small theater. You are perfectly individualized and constantly visible, much like, well, like us in this postmodern world. Isolated in non-communal housing, in increasingly smaller family units, and in office cubicles, in which nearly all of our activities can be observed. through literal observation by the cameras, which are, I don't know if you've noticed, constantly springing up in public places and workplaces, to the electronic monitoring of workers, through data monitoring of marketing companies, credit agencies, ATMs, telecoms, insurance companies, not to mention the government. Like Carta, we live in a society being constructed where all our behavior is regulated through the fear of theoretical observation by powerful entities. If you don't believe me, go to your computer, go to your web browser, and go to the web browser tools and turn off the cookies. Cookies are little marketing tracking devices that make note of every place you go on the internet. And without the cookies turned on, you can't get anywhere on the internet. Very few sites will let you on. We know this deep in our bones. We don't need to be microchipped. We don't need to be barcoded. We can be found anytime by anybody who wants to. So knowing this, we mostly police ourselves now. Knowing we can be observed, we regulate ourselves. Having killed the all-seeing, all-judging God, we have remade a social order in his controlling image. We are seen, but we never see the controllers. We are the object of information, hardly ever the subject in communication. The prison, social control, has been internalized without force, without coercion, with our silent consent. This is the essence of postmodernity. Back to Carta. So now, with limitless possibilities before her and years of well-meaning zoological institutionalization inside of her, what did Carta do? After half an hour atop the enclosure wall, she loped back home to the only home she'd ever known, where food was available, she knew, and where her kind lived. So there was no longer, you see, a need for the fences she had conquered. There was no longer a need for the walls she had scaled. She had internalized the mechanisms of her own control so completely, she had become her own keeper. Jakarta? No. She went of her own accord. So here, I think, is the second reason why this story resonated so deeply with so many people all over the world, in her aspirations and in her accommodation. We see an image of ourselves stripped down to essential drives. So not only did her story have the arc of a good story, but it kind of whispers to us about key ways in which we understand what it is to be human. It's a distorted mirror, but a mirror. As a side note, the ending of her story, where she goes back to the cage, many people found disappointing and upsetting. Part of the fascination, I think, with the story is the disturbance produced by the lack of a Hollywood ending, so it stays with you. Carta's bid for freedom, we feel, is achieved, but not resolved somehow. Well, hold the phone a second, Rob. Orangutans, after all, aren't like humans, are they? I mean, maybe aren't you just projecting your own human condition onto dumb animals, anthropomorphizing them as humans are often meant to do? But before you lapse into that uncomforting thought, consider the following. Spain's parliament, composed, no doubt, of thoughtful, sober, professional people, has recently voiced support for the rights of great apes to life and freedom. Oh, those zany, wacky Europeans, what will they do next? This declaration of the rights of great apes, devised by scientists and philosophers, said, and I quote, "Our closest genetic relatives deserve rights hitherto limited to humans." How close genetically are they? Well, over 98% DNA similarity, closer than, say, any two major breeds of dogs. But this is not the only argument for giving rights to great apes. The Australian ethicist Peter Singer and others have tried to express just what it is that indicates personhood. And guess what? It turns out that great apes have them all. One, rationality and self-awareness. Pretty obvious in Carta's case. Tool making and using, previously considered unique to humans, implies a comprehension of cause and effect and complex problem solving. It also shows reflection, the ability to think about an experience without prompting from external stimuli. So that's a criteria she meets. Two, self-control. Carta's project was certainly purposeful and required persistent application of a planned set of actions. These were not derailed by her other vital interests for food and sleep and so on. So that's two criteria she qualifies for. Three, a sense of the future. Well, obviously, knowing the sticks would one day be needed. That's three ticks. A sense of the past. Well, grief. Four ticks. The capacity to relate to others, the social networking Carta had to engage in to negotiate the collection of sticks. That's five personhood ticks. Concern for others. Now, this isn't evident in Carta's case, but is well documented in studies of other great apes. There's the story of Binti, for example, the silverback gorilla in the San Diego Zoo, who, when a toddler fell into the great ape enclosure, scooped up the human toddler, stroked and rocked it until the zookeepers could come and get her. Seven, curiosity, obviously a tick for Carta. And eight, communication. Again, not evident in Carta's case, but again, widely documented in the research. There is, for example, the famous study that I learned as an undergraduate psych student of Washoe the chimp and many others who have been taught sign language. And with it, they converse with humans, with other chimps, and with themselves. They make, tell, and laugh at jokes in sign language. Eight criteria for personhood, out of which Carta's case evidences six. In fact, now that I think about these criteria for personhood, I know some humans that fail to meet many of them. So again, what's human? What's ape? The difference between us is not really a difference of kind, but of degree of development. Research shows that all great apes, like human persons, have these capacities, and Carta certainly exhibited six out of eight in this one event, passing in the space of a few days from toolmaker to postmodern object, through the stages of enlightenment, optimism, and the modern confrontation with existential freedom, and deciding in the end, as we all more or less do, to accept our cell, furnish it as comfortably as we can, and get through our days. But how she managed to escape, while interesting, is not nearly so revealing of human-ape similarity as why she did it. Zoologists were forthright in saying that she was depressed and grieving at the loss of her longtime mate, Pusung. They tell us all great apes grieve. And if they grieve, then something not unlike love must have been happening. For there can be no sense of sundering if there was not once a sense of union. We don't have to imagine very hard, do we, what it must be like to have a beloved longtime partner simply vanish. To feel that in her pain, however ape-like, she must once have been happy in her life with her partner. Zoos, of course, are wonderful. They provide the best environment possible, of course, but it cannot really be known if zoos make apes happy. In fact, as another similarity, we don't even really understand our own happiness, how to make ourselves happy perfectly. And grief in human beings is poorly understood, too. After all, people do strange things out of grief. And so, if they are like us in intelligence, albeit to a lesser degree, maybe they're absolutely like us in their capacity to suffer. So again, interpreting Carta's jailbreak and voluntary reincarceration may just come down to our preferred reflexive assumptions. One, apes are not like us, so therefore this is just the story of a troublesome subhuman who's clever enough to escape captivity, but fundamentally lazy. The meal ticket wins out over the will to freedom, and the dumb animal returns to where the food trough is. Or, two, apes are like us, and so suffering led to a bid for freedom, that freedom to knowledge, and that knowledge to acceptance of life as it's known, rather than chancing the unknown. I suggest to you this morning that the latter reading is the truer. It is certainly the richer reading. And even if you dispute the appropriateness of bestowing human rights upon great apes, you'd have to agree that in not doing so, you'd be taking away from them more than you'd be giving them. For Carter's case shows that they are more like us, even in our suffering, even at our most fearful, even at our most morally timid. What if we were to grant the great apes a dignity and a personhood equal to our own, given that the differences are a matter of degree? Well, we might shake our head at the destruction of unborn fetuses in abortion clinics, but we're talking here about a being with the intelligence of a five-year-old, as well as a capacity to suffer, and which we have typically regarded historically as less than human. Wouldn't we then have to reevaluate what makes us human, what makes us special? Maybe, just maybe, we're not all that special after all, and our sense of superiority to nature is an illusion, and that we're more intimately linked to lower forms of life than we might care to admit, that like us, the apes are born and grow up and die in a fix, and maybe, like us, they also know it. And if we allow that one small step toward acknowledging rights for great apes, why stop at apes? Why not grant dignity and freedom to all sentient beings, not eat them, not cage them, not experiment on them, not wear their skin and fur? Really begin to live as though we share this planet and its resources, this complex experience we call life in the world, that there is more that unites us than divides us. Would this also not grant us a greater dignity too? Do we not become more nobly human when we grant human dignity to others? Well, that's a parallel reality that social movement groups like PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and GRASP, this is a great acronym, GRASP, the Great Ape Standing and Personhood Project, envision. A world of truly open hearts where we venerate the miracle of all sentient beings, not just our own species. I mean, the very notion of species is specious. These categories of beings were, after all, artificially imposed by human thinking. Perhaps we'd be a little less neurotically self-centered, a little less in love with the notion of us alone occupying the summit of creation, the tip of the Darwinian tree. And more worryingly, it's that anthropocentric assumption of human specialness that underlies all traditional fundamentalist religion, that God made humans special. The theory of evolution and Carter's story messily blurs the divide between us and our planet mates. Yes, the notion of evolution has made many shaved apes nervous. I believe God made me in one day. Yep, looks like you rushed it. For myself, I think given the choice, I'd rather be descended from a wily ape than from a bigoted fundamentalist nincompoop any day. When we go to the zoo, we already sense in our bones the connections with the great apes, which is, I think, why for a while the whole world wanted to know about Carter. We want her to be free, having richly earned it, and because we feel we can't be. We want her to be free for us. And this is why, in my imagination at least, I provide the Hollywood happy ending to this story. I see a lone hominid sitting atop a wall, scaled triumphantly as part of a self-willed evolution into personhood, gazing off into an unknown world, at the strange city, at the hills which ring the Garna Plains. But instead of slinking back off to rejoin the safe and the known, I see her take a deep breath, leap from the wall, and tear off through the park, bounding away, skirting the shrieking hominids who were holding ice cream and chips up to their frozen, gaping mouths, heading for the thickets, clambering nimbly up the trees and out of the grounds, off, off toward the vegetated hills as the sun begins to set, running, running to find Pusung, and if not Pusung, to just keep going, living by silence and cunning in exile. And as it's my fantasy, I'm there, of course, and I'm cheering her on, voice catching in my throat as I cry, "Run, Carta, run, and don't look back." But that's not how it played out, of course. And in her return, we see a pretty clear image of our own self-maintained, well-appointed prison. Like most of us, I don't know perfectly how to make myself happy, but I would be depressed to think that, like Carta, we just can't handle freedom. That, like her, we're just not ready yet. But maybe, you know, we're set to evolve too. Maybe when we realize that we have internalized the mechanisms of our own control, have willfully disempowered ourselves, then we might begin looking around for the tools to short-circuit our fences with. And then, who knows what we might become? Well, the story of Carta has a postscript you'll be interested to know. Carta has a new male friend who is kind and loving towards her. And rumor is she's expecting. And if there is a heaven, I feel sure Pusung would be smiling at this. He would smile to know that grief comes to an end, that love can be reborn, and that the genes are passed on as the pageant of life rolls ever onward. And if the child of this union thrives, armed with Carta's genes, who knows what it might become? Amen.